Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Head on Fire is a Patreon-supported podcast. Supporters of the show get early access to ad-free episodes, a private Discord server, archives, and more. All benefits are offered on a sliding scale, so no matter your level of donation, you never miss out. If you like this show, consider supporting it with a dollar a month or whatever you can at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Thanks, and enjoy the show. So unless you've been living under a rock for the last few years, you'll remember that the world turned a very specific proprietary shade of pink last year when the Barbie movie came out. Now, when the news was first announced that a movie was being made about the world's most infamous doll, it got a lot of people talking, mostly asking, who asked for this? Do we actually want this? Then when set photos leaked and the inevitable trailer dropped, even more people started taking notice. The Barbie trend was everywhere. You couldn't go to Halloween last year without somebody in one of those rollerblade costumes. Barbie has occupied a pretty strange place in our popular culture that we haven't fully reckoned with. She's seen as both a feminist icon and a tool of oppression, and all points in between and beyond. She means different things to girls and women all over the world, but Barbie is also a thing. She's a doll. She's a lot of dolls. She's not even a she. She's plastic. and cartoons and costumes. And okay, you get where I'm going with this. Matthew Keith is a Barbie collector, photographer, and doll expert whose work has been featured in the Los Angeles Times, New Now Next, and on a social media feed near you. I sat down with him to talk about the history of Barbie, the very specific place and culture she occupies, the commerce of doll collecting, the art inspired by and made in spite of her, and what these dolls mean to little queer kids like him and me all over the world. Matthew Keith, welcome to Head on Fire. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I am obsessed. I'm obsessed with everything about your platform. I'm obsessed with everything I'm seeing behind you. But for people who may not know you or what it is that you do, tell people a little bit about yourself.
Well, I gravitated towards Barbie when I was a child. I wasn't allowed to have them, so I bought some secretly when I was in middle school. And then when I was an adult, I started collecting. So once iPhones could take close-up pictures, I started taking a lot of photos for Instagram. I had been taking doll photos since the 1990s, but now I'm able to share. So I do a lot of glamour photos because I grew up in the 70s surrounded by hippies, which is why I gravitated towards Barbie. She looked like me with blonde hair and she had bright colors, and it was the opposite of all the earth tones I saw in the hippies around me. So anyway, that explains why it's glamour and like dolls wearing business suits and ball gowns, because I didn't see those as a child. So I'm Dolls on the Brain on Instagram and TikTok, and it's a lot of glamour photos, like I said. And also I do AbFab, Golden Girls, 30 Rock, clips like that that I do with the dolls. My brother and I used to do stop motion growing up.
That's amazing.
My undergraduate degree is in film. So I do some stop motion, but usually I just do puppetry instead.
So I'm always really curious about like particular pieces of culture, particular pieces of pop culture. Like I'm a big comic book fan. I'm a big geek. You can see some Marvel stuff over there. And I'm always fascinated by what we gravitate towards, because I think that pieces of pop culture, I think sometimes they get written off as supercilious, as fluffy, as not serious, but I very much disagree. I think that they are reflections of who we are and tell us things about ourselves. What do you think Barbie, but dolls maybe largely tell us about ourselves? What conversation are we having with ourselves through the medium of dolls?
Yeah, and like you said, people may dismiss pop culture, but if it resonates with people, obviously there's something there. And people have noticed Barbie doesn't really set trends. She follows them. So you can look at her as a reflection of where we have gone ever since 1959, because they're always copying what is going on in the real world. And I think, you know, kind of what I said before, like, it shows you what I didn't have. Like, I never saw a woman in a business suit until I saw an Alfred Hitchcock film. And I never saw a woman in a ball gown until I moved to New York City. The high school proms in Cupertino, California did not count, because they all got their dresses from the Gunny Sacks outlet. So, and then there would be seven girls in the same dress. So, you know, I think it's a way for us to access things that we don't have. And also, yeah, they tell a story, and there's archetypes, and different toys and pop culture things are popular for a reason, because they resonate with either what we don't have or what we want or what we do have.
You know, you say that and it immediately resonates, but I never thought about that before, that Barbie is not necessarily a trend setter, but kind of a lagging indicator of where we've been. It's almost a dull history of our recent past, and maybe is it maybe also what we would like to think the recent past was? Is it a more rose-colored glasses version of the recent past?
Let's hope so. You know, and like I said, I grew up around hippies. To me, Barbie was the rose-colored version of the women that I saw, because she styled her hair, she wore blush, she didn't have leg stubble. So I think it's definitely the rose-colored version, but of course Barbie has made fashion mistakes, as have we all.
So speaking of Barbie and mistakes, on Barbie specifically, when it comes to dolls, Barbie is kind of, you know, empress of all. On Barbie specifically, our culture has this kind of love-hate relationship with Barbie. And in my eyes, and I think a lot of people's eyes, Barbie was maybe kind of, I don't know about on the way out, but had been demoted to a place in culture in recent years and decades. But last summer's blockbuster, obviously, kind of brought Barbie back into the zeitgeist in a whole new way, and I think made people appreciate what Barbie has been for us and what she might still be for us. So why do you think that kind of love-hate tension exists with Barbie specifically?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with her very sexualized image, which was a problem from the very beginning. And, you know, that still exists. The clothes are very revealing, very sexual in some cases. So I think that is part of it. And, you know, she is so ubiquitous, I think, some parents are frustrated. They want to exert some control over the fact that she just is everywhere. And she also was not on trend. Like you said, she kind of got demoted. There was Bratz. There was a couple other people, dolls that have come and gone. And, you know, she's not always reflective of what people want. But what was the question?
No, well, I mean, there's that kind of love-hate tension with Barbie. Yes. And like you were even describing why we're fascinated with her. I mean, she sort of represents this kind of like alpha female image, right? You were talking about, well, she always wears blush and her hair is always done. I mean, there is kind of an unachievability, an unattainability about Barbie that we have this tension with. I mean, there's the art piece of it. There's the reflection of it. There's this rose-colored glasses of our recent past of it. But also, there's the question of the body image. And there's the question of what is this doing to our psyche? And what is this doing when we play with Barbie and wish that we could grow up being a 7-foot-tall Amazon with ankles the size of pencils?
You are right. And the body image is absolutely part of the issue, and has been from the beginning. I met a man who was at the the toy fair the day Barbie was launched. He was there demonstrating a toy, and he said all the businessmen, all the sales reps were walking around saying, "Have you seen the doll with the tits? Have you seen the doll with the tits?" So obviously her body has been an issue since the very beginning, and they've modified her body multiple times, but it is still the ideal for many people. And that is frustrating, but you know, look at art. Look at sculpture. Mm. There, the ideal, Michelangelo's David, the ideal is there and we worship it, but you know, we also get frustrated because maybe we're not at that level.
Do you think that queer men, queer people, but maybe queer men specifically, experience dolls differently than women do? Because I feel like when I talk to queer doll collectors, like we're seeing something in dolls that maybe women or cis folks like aren't seeing.
I think so. You know, definitely I'm not as aware of the body image, you know, realism as I should be. So I'm kind of blind to that. But I think it can be an expression of the glamour or style that is missing from the life of, you know, most men. You know, men's fashions are very boring. They don't change very much. We don't get as many opportunities to explore, perhaps, as women. Okay, maybe I'm just showing off how I was socialized into behaving a certain way. And I could be wearing, you know, makeup and, you know, a glitter tube top right now. But I think it's sort of an escapism, you know, similar to doing drag. And there are several drag queens now that we know that are doll collectors. So I think, and especially for me, you know, because I was trying to, you know, cleanse my mind of all the hippies. It was a glamorous gateway into an alternate world.
You know, a little over 10 years ago, I found an article that you wrote about the perils of dating as a gay man and a Barbie collector. I remember the, you know, growing up in that sort of deeply conflicted era of the early 2000s when internalized homophobia had this like vice grip on queer culture and gay men specifically. But it does seem like there has been kind of a seismic culture shift. Queer men have been embraced as beauty influencers, beauty vloggers. It's now becoming much more common to wear skirts and dresses on red carpets and all over social media. And we're allowed to occupy a space that is both redefined masculinity and reclaimed femininity. And all of that said, how do you see this shift in culture, especially in the queer community and the way that kind of we interact with that middle ground of redefining masculinity, femininity? And does Barbie play a role in that?
I love it. It's great to see. I do see pushback, but hopefully we keep moving in the direction that people are able to embrace masculine, feminine, or non-binary roles and identities. I do see it in the doll world in some of the designs that are coming out from Integrity Toys and Mattel, especially the designer Carlisle. I don't want to mispronounce his last name. It starts with an N. Is doing things that are more, it's not traditional. So it's nice to see it trickle down. And like I said, you know, Barbie and Ken definitely follow trends and some of that is coming in. And there have also been some dolls that appear a little bit more gender neutral. Like there was a Skipper doll wearing overalls with green hair. So that's really great to see represented. And Mattel did an entire line of dolls called the Creatable World dolls that could be boys or girls. They came with wigs and male and female clothes. The line apparently lost money or was not successful because they discontinued it, but it's a great reflection. And I know a 7-year-old boy who was very happy to see that said, "It looks like me." And he had the one that resembled him. And he often put the long wig on and transitioned it to a girl.
Well, and what I love about it, I mean, obviously, you know, we are still talking about a big, massive corporation. When you talk about Mattel and Barbie specifically, it's a huge property. The movie wouldn't have made $1 billion if it wasn't. And so obviously, you know, I don't want to like, I don't know, infantilize the $1 billion industry, but it is nice to see that they are trying here and there to to reflect people back to themselves. And like you said, it might be a little bit of a lagging indicator there, but it is nice to see that, you know, different types of bodies, an expanded set of skin tones, hair types, skin types, mm-hmm. and all of that is being reflected. You know, it was really beautiful to see in the Barbie movie. We had Barbie in a wheelchair, trans Barbie, you know, the President Barbie is a Black woman. Like, it's just, it's wonderful to see them at least trying here or there. Now, obviously, capitalism still has to get involved. If it doesn't make money, they're not going to do it because they're not running a charity. But mm-hmm. it is nice to see them doing it. And if they do it, other people then kind of get to be allowed to do it. And that's
exactly.
Nice.
Yes, it's wonderful. It's really nice that it's so inclusive. And it was, you know, overdue.
Now, speaking of, you know, money and not running a charity, like any kind of collectible, accessibility into a collection world comes with financial ability. You can pretty much obtain whatever you want if you can pay for it. That inherently feels like a gate that is kept. What are your tips for somebody who would love to collect while being on a budget?
That's a great idea because... yes, absolutely. And some of the collectible dolls and the Barbie convention is several hundred dollars. I would start with what is called playline or mainline dolls, the dolls you see in Target or other stores, and just buy what you like. That's, you know, Barbie was not collectible for many years. It was intended as a children's toy. That's what I started with. That's what pretty much all the collectors I know started with, just buying the dolls that are out right now in the stores. And sure, I cut off ribbons and bows and restyled their hair, trying to make it a little bit less over the top, more, you know, simplified with what I wanted. And there's lots of great YouTube, Instagram videos about modifying dolls. And there's lots of sellers on Etsy. So you can start at the same level as children with what's available right now, and then modify it if you want it to look different.
You know, I want to talk about modification because I have seen, when I do see doll content, because I think, you know, as like a generic geek, you get fed a lot of different, you know, the algorithm is like, mm-hmm. hey, might you also like this? But I do see, I see it more in like the like Marvel action figure collector space where like a toy is put out and it doesn't look exactly like the character. So, mm-hmm. so I see a lot of like modifications done, like where people like will just wipe the face off and repaint it so it looks more like a character, or repaint it to fix a printing mistake or something on the face. What do you think about that? Like, just from a, do you view yourself as more of like an archivist? Like, no, I must preserve the original thing, or I see you shaking your head.
Absolutely not. I mean, I take them all out of the boxes because if they were in the box, it would be like I was a child and I couldn't play with it. And I, you know, there's people that do that. There are archivists, non-deboxers. I will change the hairstyle. I will wipe off eyeshadow with nail polish remover. I will do whatever I want. It's there to be played with. And it, like you said, it's a mass-produced commodity. It's not the last one on the earth. I can do whatever I want, and there will still be, you know, the day-to-night Barbie in the box for somebody to appreciate.
I love that. So have you ever done that with it all? Do you have your own little modification system? Like, I know that you said that you will wipe off eyeshadow. Have you ever done like a big giant transformation?
You know, my father has Parkinson's. I don't think I have it, but I do have a coffee addiction. So my hands are not steady. So I am not going to paint anything. My boyfriend does paint dolls. So he's done a few things for me. The most I do is hair or removing excessive makeup. I used to do a lot of hair with my very first Barbie friend, Johnny, and I don't really have the patience for it anymore, but I will definitely like condition their hair, you know, because I don't need it to look like they just had a shock treatment.
You know, what's funny is, speaking of first doll, like, you know, how you got your start. Actually, I would love to know, what was your first doll? Like, how did you get this start? Did you get to start in childhood, or was this like a reclaimed childhood thing as an adult? Because I resonate with that, if that's how it was.
It was both. You know, I didn't steal dolls from the neighbors. I've met a lot of male doll collectors that would do that. They would steal them from their neighbors or their cousins.
I love that you start your answer with, okay, I need you to know I didn't steal, but whatever else is next, I am here for. I am strapped in.
You know what? It's actually not bad.
It wasn't theft. It was creative borrowing.
I don't know why I am putting those people on in a public forum with what they did. But I used female friends for doll play. Not, you know, I liked them, but sure. I always wanted to play with their dolls. And then when they transitioned out of doll play, I didn't have access to dolls anymore. So I saved up money. I went to the Sears in my town, like I said, Cupertino in Silicon Valley. And I bought myself a doll. It was stressful. Seems like everybody in town was in the doll aisle that day. I just kept circling it like a helicopter waiting to land. And then I just grabbed a doll that it looked like that was the big doll of the year, because there were a lot of them. And I didn't know how to compute sales tax, so I was very nervous I wouldn't have enough, but I did. And, you know, I loved it. It was great. It was like a drug to have her at home. And eventually I got tired of that doll and threw her away, you know, destroy the evidence. And then I know. And I had nightmares that she would fall out of the trash can when the garbage men were emptying it, and that I had wrapped her up. I was worried she would like fall out and land on the front lawn and all the neighbors would see her and my parents would freak out, because it was very stressful.
I have to wrap her up because I don't want to hurt the doll, but I don't want the doll. I'm going to throw it in the trash.
Oh, yeah. It was like a serial killer trying to dispose of the body. And I bought another.
Do you now regret that decision?
Well, I had cut her hair, which was a mistake.
Did you make a weird Barbie?
It wasn't a weird Barbie, but it looked like she had gone to a beauty college and somebody was just learning to cut hair.
Oh, poor thing. Oh, maybe you did a kindness.
I did. My second one, I kept cutting the hair until it was like short. And so then I drew old age lines on her. So she was a weird Barbie. And that was Beauty Secrets. So she looked like a cougar trying to get into Studio 54 by the time I was done with her. Because she had this Halston outfit and lines on her face and
Halston
short hair.
Do you still have this one? Is this somewhere?
I don't have the original. I have a couple I could show you. I'm looking at them right now. But and then the third doll, I cut her hair. By the fourth doll that I bought when I was in middle school, I realized, okay, don't cut the hair. You don't know what you're
doing. Cut the hair.
Yeah.
Don't cut the hair. I had a Chrissy doll. I don't even know if that's actually the name of the doll. That was what I called the doll. It was like the hair grew back and you ratcheted it in. And then the hair grew, and then you pulled the hair, and then it grew back. I never knew. It got ratty after years of pulling her hair. That soundbite's gonna come back to haunt me. But I didn't know you could shampoo it. I'm pretty sure it still lives in my mom's house. I'm nice. Almost positive it's in her like cello studio. But it was this big brown hair, and you yanked it and you pulled it back. But I at least knew not to cut the hair.
So your parents,
I was a very precious child.
You were allowed to play with dolls.
That is that's a great question, actually. I don't know. It's a weird thing to answer because I wasn't like if they were around, I wasn't like prevented from them, but they were not purchased for me. Like the Chrissy doll came from my grandmother's house. Like she found it at an antique store or a garage sale or something. My grandmother loved garage sales. Oh my God, love garage sales. You know, I like when we were babysitting some kids or something like that, like if the daughter had Barbies, I would definitely play with them. Now, what's funny is my uncle loves to tell this story. So you know how McDonald's obviously has Happy Meals and toys, and there's mm-hmm. There's the Barbie Happy Meal. I have no idea if they still do this, but forever when I was a kid, there was the Hot Wheels and Hot Wheels and Barbie. They always did Hot Wheels and Barbie at the same time, always, because mm-hmm. it's like boy stuff, trucks for boys and dolls for girls. And I was, see, now, ever they say being gay is a choice, I'm going to tell them this story. Yeah, I was so young, I do not remember this. I was like maybe, three or four years old, very, very young. And my uncle took me to McDonald's, and we were in the drive-thru. And we went through, got a Happy Meal. He handed it to me. And I opened it, and we're driving out of the parking lot and down the road, and I opened the Happy Meal, and apparently I started screaming bloody murder. And he's like, what happened? Did they pack a knife in this Happy Meal? Like, is there a bomb in this Happy Meal? Like, what? Why are you screaming? And he's like, what's going on? What's wrong? And I apparently looked over him and said, I want the Barbie. And they had given me a Hot Wheels, and I didn't let it go. And we had to drive back to McDonald's, and we had to go in and exchange that Hot Wheel for a Barbie. And I did end up, my parents would get me the Barbie Happy Meal toy. And I had all of them. I had the bridal Barbie. I had like disco Barbie. There was like ballerina. I don't know what she was, but she had like a jacket and like a frilly tutu or what. I loved it. And I played with them like they were like superheroes. I loved it. Mm. I remember the Wonder Woman Barbie team up thing that they tried to do for a while. I had all of them. I had all the McDonald's Barbies. Do you have a fondness? I'm talking too much. Do you have a fondness for the McDonald's Barbie?
No, I want to hear, because to me, it's always of interest what men, experienced as children. I don't. I didn't get any of those. My parents, the hippie lifestyle, you don't go to McDonald's. So I didn't really have that joy. And we went to one that had all this like stained glass and driftwood in it, because it was like somehow acceptable to them because the aesthetic was so 70s, but we ate inside. And years later, there was an expose. That place had horrible safety violations because they only had one sink in the entire restaurant.
See, now I'm glad that you said that, because I was about to go hunt down the McDonald's with the driftwood and the stained glass and go, have a $2
it's,
burger.
It's been redone for sure. But, Northern California in the 70s, that was the look. So I didn't play with those, but I'm so glad you got them, and that's great.
I did, and that was my experience with Barbie, and that was kind of about the limit that I could go. But I mean, I was also, I was a big geek as a kid, so I did get a lot of action figures. And I did want to ask, I have this on my list to ask you, is there really a difference other than it's okay to give a boy an action figure? Is there an actual like inside the community technical difference between action figure and doll?
I think so. I'm not interested in action figures. It may be Star Wars, but it's different for me. My boyfriend collects both. He has a ton of action figures and a ton of Barbies. So, there's crossover in some. And I think, he also had a very sort of strict gender role type of father. I think the action figures are a way in for a lot of people, just like the McDonald's Barbies were a way in for you. They might not buy you an actual Barbie, but they would buy you the McDonald's toy.
Mm-hmm.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I had a million action figures. Like, they had no problem buying me, you know, a Jean Grey or a Catwoman or a whatever. Something about it being a Barbie, you know. Now, what's funny is I did get a Ken. They would buy me a Ken. I do have pictures of me holding on to my Ken. And I remember, I don't know like the name of the specific Ken, but I do know that he had this like white one piece, like white pants and like vest thing that I think was supposed to be the underpiece of a tuxedo. And he had a purple sparkly jacket. And I remember taking his sparkly purple jacket off and just let him like have his guns out. And I would hold onto that thing for dear life, like it was driftwood in a storm. I loved that thing. I have no idea where it is now. But I have photos of that with when I was a kid, like with my granny, just me holding on to my Ken. That, they would get me a Ken. I did get a Ken.
Some collectors use that as a way in, and I would love to see that photo. You should post that. And I think I know which doll you're talking about. Did he have brown hair?
It was like the early 90s or late 80s, early 90s. So, I mean, it was that, like, I feel like it was that color of hair they gave all the men at the time. It was like that dusty,
ash blonde.
Dirty blonde. The ashy blonde. It's not brown. It's not blonde. It's whatever color our paint can spit out. I feel like every male action, whatever, had that color hair at the time.
For
which was
so
great
many years.
It was my color hair. You know, that ashy blonde, that's my color hair.
Mine too, back in the day. But to me, it's boring. I want blonde or brunette.
I love it.
Nothing in between.
No red? No red hair,
oh,
Barbie?
No, I love red. I love red.
So what do you look for when you are out there choosing a doll? Like, what catch? At this point, you have a lot of them. So I would imagine that you either just become somebody, like once you build up a collection, you either become somebody that's like, well, I have all the others, I might as well have that one. Or you become somebody that's like, okay, well, I have all the others, I don't need that one, so it's got to be really something special for me to take it home. Where do you fall on that spectrum, and what triggers you to say, oh, that's for me?
Yes, I'm not a completionist. I don't buy all of the holiday Barbies or any line. It really has to be something that I like, you know, because I figure it'll make someone else happy. I don't need it. It's a variety of factors. You know, when I first started collecting, everything was the superstar face, which is sort of a kind of a grinning idiot face. They had this big smile. So I do like dolls that have a closed mouth, so it's more neutral. And then, you know, anything that is what I didn't see growing up, I'm not going to buy boots. I'm not going to buy jeans. I'm not going to buy anything like a brown suede jacket for Barbie, anything fringed, no ponchos. It's going to be the ideal. Business suits, ball gowns. You know, I do like blonde hair a lot because that's what I had as a child. That's what I first saw. Yep, exactly. And so I do gravitate towards that. I also love red. And, you know, like I said, my undergraduate degree is in film. I love to photograph the dolls. So I think about what I don't have, how it might photograph. And I love multiples. I have, as you can see, there's multiples right behind me. I have like 12 of this one. Oh, she must be on pills. She dropped her purse. So I will buy a lot of the same, and I will not feel any shame about it.
I love when people personify their dolls. Do you ever, they're in a fight? Do they take on a life of their own? Do they get up and walk around at night?
I know. Sometimes, what the realtor that sold me this house, she was telling me that I needed to use the spare bedroom for my book collection. And I just imagine the dolls like rising out of the boxes like zombies and strangling her with one of her ugly necklaces, because the books can go in the living room. This room is for Barbie. You know, I do curse at them sometimes when they don't do what I want in photos, like look in the effing camera. And I do have a diorama that I swear is possessed, and I do have one doll that I swear is possessed. She always does the opposite of what I want in photo shoots. But aside from that, no. I'm trying not to sound as crazy as I just did.
No, listen, you can sound crazy here. As you can see, I have many collections of things. You can't see over there. There's Marvel stuff there, and there's art and book stuff there. But what you can always see in the background of many of my videos is part of my mask collection. I was a theater kid growing up. I have a mask collection.
Nice.
This is one of the things that people, you know, when they want to give me a gift, you know how everybody's their thing.
Oh,
like I have a
yes.
friend who really loves sharks, and so anytime anybody wants to get her a gift, they're like, well, you like sharks, so clearly you will like these shark mittens or something. And she's like, I do. I'm good on sharks. But it's like when somebody wants to get me a gift and they don't know what to get me, a mask will do. And, it usually works. So I get it, because people look at them and they're like, those are creepy. How do you and I'm like, it's art. It's theater. What are we talking about? It's not creepy. So, but I get it. You can be crazy, because I will. I get it.
You know what? I love that, people knowing what you want. I mean, it can backfire, like the sharks or my friend Lynn. Somebody started this rumor that she had a Miss Piggy obsession, and she was like, no more Miss Piggy. Stop. But, and for me, like the, you know, being ashamed back in the day about sharing my Barbie collection, one of the things about being out is people give you Barbies. Like my friend Laura, her students have given her so many. I was with my friend Peter once. This woman called him and she said, oh, I just saw the article about you. I have all my vintage Barbies. I want to give them to you. So I love people knowing what I like, and, you know, being your honest self pays dividends. Not to make it sound greedy and crass, but like when you live in your truth, there's benefits.
Absolutely. You know, speaking of people giving them to you, I do think that kind of memory lives in things sometimes. I've written about that before, where it does feel like we kind of pool a piece of ourselves into a vase that was given to us, or a mask. You know, like this one right here was my first one, and my grandmother found it, and it has always meant several, you know, a lot of things to me. And when I was a kid, when my great grandfather passed away, I was too young to really fully process it, but I did get a jar of marbles that was his jar of marbles, and I didn't realize how close to him I was until a babysitter was in my room. She was babysitting me one time, and she knocked the jar of marbles off a shelf, and the glass that held the marbles shattered. And I freaked out, inconsolably crying for hours and hours and hours, because I was like, well, that was my connection to my great grandfather. And thing is, I was like, I was very, very young. I was elementary, middle school, and you know, I didn't really couldn't fully process death. I put memory in things. Do you kind of pick up a doll sometimes and suddenly remember where you were? Does memory live in certain dolls for you?
Absolutely. And I'm lucky because I have a freakishly good memory, like insane. Like one of my former students just DM'd me on Instagram. I said, oh yeah, you used to live on Archwood Street in the Valley. I remember you. So it's great because yes, I remember them. And my friend Laura, the one that I mentioned, she puts a post-it note on every doll, like who she was with, who gave it to her, where she bought it. But yes, absolutely. I have a doll that a friend of mine, he restyled the hair in the 90s. Whenever I look at that, I remember that. And you know, the faces that I first saw when I was a child, what is called the TNT face, you know, that brings me right back to my childhood, like that scene in Ratatouille where O'Toole tastes the Ratatouille and then it zooms back into his childhood. So yes, for sure.
Do you have a favorite? Is there a favorite doll? Can you
there
have
is.
A favorite?
There is. And well, yes, you can. And you can also have about 27 of her, which is what I have. It's the Blonde Swirl Repro. If people Google it, they will see it. For those people watching, I know she's in here because there's 27. Let me grab her. I don't even have to, I probably don't even have to get off my chair. Yes, there she is. So that is my favorite. It's just beautiful doll, looks great and everything. And, you know,
I am
not a hippie.
Or I can't see her very clearly, but she is what I imagine the witch from The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe would look like. The giant ball gown behind you is gorgeous.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Exactly.
Like
yes. My ex-boyfriend was just reading Lion, Witch and the Wardrobe to his son, who's 5 last night. And I was over there for dinner and bedtime. And I was thinking, White Witch, I want this. That sounds pretty glamorous. Someone needs to do it. As long as it doesn't look like Tilda Swinton, I'm on board.
Oh, she's gorgeous. She's lovely. She's all of the things.
Yes. So that is my favorite. But of course, I have many favorites. You know, if the house was burning, I wouldn't just grab one. I would just run outside.
And... just go down with the house at that point. Just it's like,
exactly.
I can't grab everything. I'm just going down. I can't choose.
Yeah, the fumes are going to suffocate me very quickly, but it'll be a pretty death.
All this hair, who knows what the chemicals mm-hmm. were from, you know, the 60s. I'm going to.
For sure.
Do you have a favorite era of Barbie? And then has anything from the last like couple decades where we've been making competitors for Barbie that even influenced Barbie? Like I know Bratz. Like the sale of Bratz kind of influenced Barbie's look for a hot minute there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite era of Barbie? And then what are your thoughts on some of these new Barbie competitors out there?
My favorite era of Barbie is pre-British invasion. Because, you know, growing up in the
70s. Early Barbie.
Yeah, 59 to about 65 or 64. Because I saw that world on TV occasionally. I saw the original Parent Trap, which had gingham in it. So obviously, mm-hmm. you know, this is my favorite. And so I knew that styles had been different in the past. It wasn't just what I saw, you know, all the teenagers wearing filthy Mexican ponchos and jeans and boots and leather purses. So that would be mine for sure. And I think, you know, I am not a fan of Bratz. I didn't love how it influenced Barbie, but there have been good influences on Barbie, like the Jean dolls from the 1990s.
Artist
Mel Odom designed a doll that was supposed to be a movie star from the 1940s and early 50s. So all of the fashions were retro. It was very successful. And I strongly believe that influenced the Barbie Silkstone line. And also the Integrity Toys dolls now are very high quality. Like the quality control is amazing. They hold their value. And I believe that also has inspired some of the collector dolls at Mattel to, you know, have a, not that they ever had bad quality control, in my opinion, but, you know, anyone who's in business looks at the competitors and, you know,
sure.
matches what they do.
Now, there is a whole world of dolls that I you don't really, I mean, you know, niche communities like comic geeks and rock collectors and stuff. Like we've all kind of had our own little insular worlds, and it's been this network of like conferences and meetup groups and all of that kind of stuff. But social media has allowed us windows into all of our various respective insular communities. And it blows my mind how deep and rich the community can be. So like with dolls, what I love about looking through your page is the fashion, the photography, all of the other little bits of the world. What are some things about being in the doll collecting, doll sharing, doll photography world that maybe outsider folks like me or other people who might be listening to the show, what are things that like, you know, or you love, or you pick up on about dolls or about interacting with them on social media that outsiders wouldn't understand?
Well, the main thing is that it's incredibly supportive. Mm. Women who collect dolls get grief, men who collect dolls get grief. And so the fact that the community is so incredibly supportive is my number one takeaway. It's just amazing. And I think it all, like in a family or a company, it all trickles down from the top. And we have Grandma Gets Real, Tanya Ruiz, and Azusa Barbie, who goes by Azusa. They're sort of the big ones, and they're so friendly that it just trickles down. So that's my takeaway. But also, I just love being able to have a community because, like, my first Barbie friend that I mentioned, Johnny, in the 90s, we put messages on Yahoo groups looking for male Barbie collectors, and we could not find anyone. Mm. And we went shopping at the Mattel outlets regularly and tried to approach people, and they're usually Matchbox collectors and they weren't that friendly, rude. So I think it's great for whatever. If you're into bowling, if you're into, you know, conspiracy theories, whatever, social media does have a benefit, and it's nice to be able to connect with people so you're not boring your friends.
So what makes a good doll photo?
You know, I believe eye contact is really important. The doll has to connect with the viewer. And, you know, I teach film, and it's all the same things that you know, we're used to long shots, medium shots, and close-ups. We're used to key lighting. I have a light right above me because, you know, I'm not trying to look older than I am. So proper lighting and, you know, in focus. I just saw one that was out of focus the other day. Maybe every hair in place. That's also a big one for me. You know, I don't need to see someone who looked like a doll that just looks like it got out of the dryer, because it is the ideal. And I was at Mattel for one day in 2013. They used to have this thing called Collector Advisory Panel, where they would invite collectors, sort of like consultants. They would ask you a lot of questions. But I saw someone photoshopping a picture of a Barbie, and I was shocked. I'm like, why does she need photoshopping? But it's true.
I think I understand that impulse, because I'm like, okay, by the time we are photoshopping Barbie, I think we have lost the plot. Like, if Barbie is not perfect enough, that is...
I know, but I my excuse is that sometimes there are flecks of dust on her face.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Eyeliner is chipped. But, you know, if there's a hair out of place or something, I will absolutely face tune it, because for me, it's the ideal. Mm-hmm. I live in an unattractive city, Los Angeles. You know, we all have enough. We all see garbage. We all see trash on the street. You know, we all see houses that are maybe not the most beautiful. We don't all live in Regent's Park, London. So I want the ideal. I want the perfection.
And what I did like about kind of the Barbie getting back into the zeitgeist is Barbie really opened the doors to a lot of what they do behind the scenes, I think. Mm-hmm. So what was fun is getting to see, because they do a lot of, obviously, doll photography as well, obviously. They do a lot. They've got to make their own ads. But it was interesting kind of seeing how they do it, because they don't start with a doll. Like, they don't start with the doll that's in the box. They go to a room, and there's heads and bodies and tops and shoes, and they open a drawer and say, okay, we're going to do a cafe scene. And so I'm thinking this head, and then we're going to go find a body for this head. And then we're going to, what's she wearing? And like, so when you are doing your photography and your styling, are you starting with a completed doll and just sending her on a journey? Or are you also, like, is there a drawer of heads somewhere in your
I wish. I mean, they are the ideal. I love that drawer of heads that they've shown. And you notice they use a lot of dolls with closed mouths, which is what I like, because then we learned in film school, like, you can project an emotion onto a blank face.
It
just
that's
depends
true.
On the context. Yep. So it starts with all sorts of different things. I did something recently that was based on a Subway ad I saw in the late 1980s, or vintage films. You know, I love old films. Or it can be a doll, or it can be like what I think of like a gag picture, you know, like a joke or a meme that I'm doing. It's all sorts of different things. You know, I'm very visually oriented. I think because as a child, my exposure to Barbie was so short, or exposure to stylist people was so short, I would kind of go into this mode where I was just very, very observant at certain times. So it's all of the above.
Is there anything about the world of doll collection or just dolls in general that people would be surprised to know that maybe we don't?
Well, that people buy multiples. You know, it does add up. It is not an inexpensive hobby, but, you know, packs of cigarettes are $12 these days. So, you know, and liquor is very expensive as well. So I think the cost and I think the number that people have. I know a lot of people are not willing to display all of theirs, or they can't. I hear a lot of times that people don't have the room. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think because they get grief from boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, wives, children, which I've heard more than once, you know, that they don't show them all. So I think, you know, if you ask a doll collector, how many do you really have? You might be a little surprised.
So I will say one of the few actual Mattel Barbie products that I own is the Tin Man. Because we did the Wizard of Oz and I played the Tin Man. So everybody in the cast got, because at that year, Barbie just so happened to be celebrating the something something anniversary of the Wizard of Oz. So they had a beautiful line. And I've looked up this line before, and apparently this particular line is quite valuable, and I should have done the smart thing and bought all of them. And I did not. I have the Tin Man, and it's signed by everybody that was in the cast. So of course now that's worthless. Yep. So, but my question,
it's not worthless. It's worth more.
Oh, maybe if I liked those people anymore, but I just,
you can take it off with acetone nail polish remover.
That is a very good reminder. So do you have, Barbie's done a lot of collaborations. Are you at least a purist in the sense that, like, no, I only like Barbie when she's Barbie, or is it like I like Barbie when she's also Glenda? Do you have an opinion on Barbie collaborations? And if so, if you like them, do you have a favorite?
You know, I never thought about it like you say, but as you said, I think I really like it when it's Barbie. Like, I bought the Glenda reproduction. They did a Glinda with a vintage face, and I redressed her. You know, I love the collaborations. I have the Mad Men dolls.
Oh, fun. And I didn't know they did that.
Yes. Well, and I use the Roger Sterling one as my mini me because, you know, gray hair, it fits.
I was going to say, I'm seeing no Ken representation behind you. I just, you know, justice for Ken.
I know. I got grief from some collectors on Instagram because I had all my Ken dolls on the floor. Like, Barbie is up here, and it's like
back of the bus for Ken.
I know. When I was at Mattel that one day, they said they sell, maybe this is outdated, but in 2013, they said they sell one Ken for about every 9 Barbies that they sell. And
wow.
That
makes sense. He's still not as fashionable. I mean, you would think, especially with everything that we've seen with, like, you know, Billy Porter and Eugene, like, just all the great men who are giving us fashion, you would think that maybe, like, I know that they do lagging indicators. I know you talked about that. I know that it's like, it's not necessarily a reflection of where we're going. It's a reflection of where we've been. But I'm like, we've been here for a minute now, babes. Like, y'all could give Ken something interesting to wear at some point, because what I'm hearing from you a lot is Barbie is this ideal. Barbie is this world of beautiful clothes and beautiful destinations and beautiful homes and kind of a perfect ideal that we're just never really going to get in the world. And we understand that it doesn't reflect. We don't live in this world. None of us, you know, we're not going to live in this world. It's an escape. And I appreciate that.
It's an imperfect escape.
Yeah, it's an imperfect escape. It's a, well, she's not photoshopped, but it's kind of a photoshopped escape. It's what life would be like if none of the flaws were there. And so I get that. But Ken deserves some of that sparkle. Like, he's been around a minute. I feel like he deserves something.
I agree. And they have always test marketed a lot of things with children. I don't know if they still do that, but I strongly suspect it. It's like, sometimes the kids are wrong. You know, just override the kids. Give us the boy in the dress, okay?
Give us the boy in the dress. Yeah. If you did Billy Porter doll in that Oscar gown,
oh yes,
I would buy. I'd buy it. Eugene.
Eugene Levy.
Yes, Eugene. No. Eugene from Try Guys, and I'm forgetting on his last name, but he just did this beautiful red, and he had the red bell bottom flare pants and the boots, but he had this beautiful like skirt train thing that came off. Oh my God, I want to wear that so bad. Except I want it in white. Oh man, I love it. But no.
You know what they did with the...
I'm just talking about men's fashion.
Well, hey, that's awesome. They did with the Weird Barbie. They made people pre-order it before they manufactured them. So they could do something like that. If they don't think it's going to sell, they could do the Billy Porter dress.
I haven't looked, and I probably could. This would be an easy Google search. But I do remember when I was in like high school, college, they used to do like a design your own Barbie. Like you could go to the Barbie website and you could kind of like design your own on the website. Do they still do that? Like, can I go buy myself as a Barbie?
I don't know if they do right now. They have done that off and on.
Oh, okay.
But that's something worth checking out.
Yep. I would love that.
You know what most people do is they just hire somebody to do it for them.
Oh yeah, I should. Maybe one day. I'm gonna get that next book deal, and I'll go get myself a.
Okay, funny, good.
My nieces have a couple of Ken dolls, and they have it had the same glasses that I did at the time, and they were like, "Uncle Don, this is you," and I'm like, "I wish." But thank you. Oh, Matthew Keith, thank you so much for being here. It has been such a pleasure getting to go on this journey of dolls with you. If people want to get more of you, your content, where can they do that?
I'm on Instagram, Dolls on the Brain. I'm on TikTok, Dolls on the Brain. I'm on Facebook, Dolls on the Brain.
I love it. Now, I did forget to ask you, if we ever get another Barbie movie, live action, or would you prefer like live action animation or stop motion? Because I always thought that stop motion Barbie, stop motion Barbie movie should be where we go next.
I agree. That's a great idea. We have seen the CGI Barbie
movies. We've seen
stop motion. Yeah, I love Wallace and Gromit and everything Aardman did, except the CGI one they did flushed away.
Give us
the
dolls.
I want to see. Yeah, that's a great idea.
I would give us that vibe. Yeah.
Yes, that would be wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for asking me.
And that is going to do it here for this episode of Head on Fire. My thanks to my guest, Matthew Keith. Go find him at Dolls on the Brain everywhere. Now, if you like the show and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to help. And I know you're probably thinking, listen, we just talked about all of this commerce and I'm about to run out and buy a whole bunch of Barbies. I'm not going to have any money. Do not worry, bestie. I've got you. There's plenty of free ways that you can support this show. You could share it with your friends on social media. Just be like, hey, here's a link to this really cool episode of this podcast that I love. That word of mouth sharing is the best way to grow this audience. Or you could take it just a slight step further, and whatever app you're currently listening to the show on, you could rate the show 5 stars, leave a comment, leave a good review, and that helps tell the algorithm to recommend the show to other listeners just like you. Now, if you have a few extra pennies and you want to make sure that you're listening to episodes well before they come out, you could join my Patreon. Patrons receive additional audio and video content, as well as archived episodes and all sorts of other little goodies. You can do that at patreon.com/HeadOnFirePod. And remember, no matter what you can give, whether it's a dollar, whether it's $100, everybody is able to access the same level of rewards because, you know, times are tough and I'm not trying to make them harder. Anyways, if you would like to connect with me on social media, I am at HeadOnFirePod everywhere. I'm TikTok and Instagram and Threads and Blue Sky and technically still Twitter. So basically whatever platform you have, just HeadOnFirePod. Anyways, I'm going to go. Thank you all so much for tuning in, downloading, streaming, and sharing. But please don't forget to never stop seeking illumination like a man with his head on fire seeks water. Be well.
Psst.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.